Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the French Connections Wednesday edition. Today's date is the 17th day of June 2009. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you all here with me for another one of my important broadcasts, because we've got analysis to share with you, things that are going on in the world. You know, they're under the under pressure, this criminal gang that we are all fighting against, and they're finding it more and more difficult to cover up their crimes. They're not very good at the job they're doing, and the reason they're not good at it was because they never had to worry about small mistakes they would make in the past. They, you know, they controlled, as my guest calls it, the mighty Wurlitzer, and because they controlled all the mouthpieces of the press and the press itself, what they would be able to do is whitewash over any evidence that came out against them. Well, what's happening now is that is no longer working. They're not getting their laws passed fast enough to stop the information on the net, although they're trying. And they're resorting to more and more bizarre methods or measures to get us all to think differently than we already do. Well, it's not working, and I'm here to tell you today, we've got some more analysis. I've got a couple of things I'm going to share that my take on things. I think it's important. But to bring this up to date here with my guest, Mohamed Rafiq, a regular visitor to the French Connection. Before I go to Mohamed, I want to let everyone know that last night was my last to broadcast on CII. Toward the end of the file, you heard me mention that to the listeners of South Africa. The reason I have left that group is they made commitments to me about trying to offset some lots of phone bills. I talk to you guys about phone bills, but I don't think until you've done all the calling I do and all the stuff I try to do over here that you really realize how much it costs. But a lot of people help me, and you know, it comes in, and I've had Jeffrey and Thomas and so many others help me. But it was not fair of these guys to get a completely free ride down there, and they made a commitment to help me and not do it. And they were also supposed to do other things. And you know, one of the things that I try to be in this life is a man of my word. And I got their word on these items, and they just didn't come through repeatedly. So I've decided to part company. That's the way it works for me, and I'm not angry with them. I wish that radio station all the luck in the world. They are dedicated, in my view, to putting out as much truth as they know how to, and for that they should be applauded. You know, Anayat Wadi down there on his broadcast, Global Vision, is absolutely top-notch, and anybody knowing the time that goes off and during the week should tune into Anayat Wadi's broadcast, because it's really, it doesn't get any better than Anayat Wadi's work. Anyway, I'm going to bring up Mohamed right now. Mohamed, are you with me?
I am indeed. Good afternoon, Daryl.
Good afternoon, Mohamed. You know, we had a couple of spare moments here, and I actually passed out for a moment and took a nap, and I shouldn't have, but I'm here now, and one of the things that you brought up to me that I want to get right into here, it seems to me, because the truth is starting to come out in, not in just dribs and drabs, but it is pouring out everywhere. People are starting to look at this conspiracy with a completely different set of facts to go look at it with. In other words, you know, because the internet is becoming saturated with truth about these criminal activities, people are starting to go and look at old information with a different bent, a different take on that information. However, my view over the last couple of weeks is that Obama was told by his handlers, because this guy hasn't made an original thought in his head ever. It was probably when he was sitting in a hot tub with one of his boyfriends when they told him to do this. But what happened was that he was told to try to warm up to the Islamic community, at least superficially, and that they were going to spin a few bits of bad blood about the Israeli-American relationship. And you saw some things come out in the alternative press, how much they hate Obama and blah, blah, blah. Well, nothing could be farther from the truth. His entire administration is Zionist-controlled. You know, you've got Axelrod and Emanuel. Those are the two people all you need to know, because they're running things from behind the scenes. And so this is a farce. And why would they do that? Well, they're in trouble, and they're going to try to spin into the mainstream, Muhammad, that you know, America and Israel aren't that close. But they're not really that. For just take a look at these recent headlines. That'll prove it to you. And I think it's just more nonsense. And now they're doing it with Jimmy Carter's recent thing. They're pulling stuff out from 1976. They're running stuff that he may have said to a local town reporter that would have never got reported on a mainstream news item like MSNBC. So what is your take on all this? And do you think I'm onto something here?
Well, I think you probably are onto something, Dale. I'm long in the tooth on this particular fight, and I was amazed to see MSNBC actually put an article out about the State Department ruling on settlements more than 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that this ruling's there, but to actually see the mighty Wurlitzer, or a part of it, actually acknowledge it for real and say, you know, is this stuff ever really going to be covered by our politicians? We do have to look at what the intention is behind this. It could also be, Darrell, like you say, trying to create an apparent rift between America and Israel. Why? Well, another reason, we must remember that the King of Saudi is holding $2 trillion in cash, and that the ruler of Abu Dhabi is worth about $1.1, $1.2 trillion in cash. So there's $3 trillion there, and if we're going to get any of that money off the ragheads, then maybe it doesn't look good if we seem to be too buddy-buddy with Israel. Whether or not these news headlines would affect that, as you say, Darrell, I mean, Obama's administration is a Zionist administration. You couldn't have more Zionist players in it than he's got him, and in such positions, open dual passport holders. I'm very confused by this. I really am.
Well, I mean, and that's what they want you to be. And of course, you know, when your analysis and mine differed on the Putin deal, I have since kept a very close eye on his actions, and I want everybody out there to put Putin's name in with the word rabbi, and then go to images. And you'll get thousands of images of him in every conceivable position. Some of them are very unflattering, with rabbis. And of course, his chief rabbi of the country in Russia is a Shabbat Lubavitch rabbi. That tells you all you need to know. And then the other side of it is, you know, his buddy-buddy partnership with Abramowitz here. I put a recent thing on the net where he's actually, Abramowitz's fortune has doubled under Putin. And interesting that Abramowitz just built himself another $300 million yacht with its own missile system and shit. So I put on my website, Putin and Abramowitz build themselves a yacht, because it says right in there that that Putin helped them get all the money to buy this stuff. So I'm saying to you, you know, if somebody as important as Putin is out there, now, of course, he may have some independence on certain issues. But like a lot of politicians, they'll give them leeway on social issues or this or that. But things that are close to their heart, you don't mess with these people, because that's the end of your life. And, you know, Kennedy will prove that to you, and McKinley will prove that to you, and Lincoln will prove that to you. There are 1,000 other assassinations since those happened. And anyway, my point is this, Muhammad. They are losing in the court of public opinion. And the best thing they could do for themselves is to say that we're all crackers. Just take a look at the headlines of the day. America and Israel hate each other. Say, look at the headlines. That's all. And they're going to say, see, these people are nuts. There's never been any close relationship between these two countries. Are you kidding me? Just take a look at the last 35 years of congressional decisions and APEC control and sending spy people back to Israel after getting caught and... My goodness. So what else do you think is happening with that? I mean, Carter, again. I mean, this guy, of course, he was in power during the settlement issue, and, of course, his administration never put its foot down on settlements either.
Indeed, Darrell. It's very interesting that we do have ex-President Jimmy Carter going around publicly criticizing Israel, and like you say, this gives the appearance of senior members of the political hierarchy of of the United States being ready to criticise Israel openly. It does give that veneer, that appearance of criticism, but he was ruling the United States for 4 years whilst that particular position from the State Department was in force, and did nothing about it at a time when he could have done something and could have made a difference. So, you know, elder statesmen criticising looks good in the media, and it does look like what you're saying, Dal, this analysis you're just giving, that they want some kind of headlines to make it look like it's not all plain sailing between America and Israel, and it's not 100% support, and they're not behind them 100% of the way on every decision. But bottom line, what's actually changing? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. And they're still shipping money over there, and they're still stealing, and they're sending... I mean, we've got some new crimes that are coming up financially, and one of the things that you brought up to me in the private call was the Fed and the Treasury and the federal government telling California, sorry, Charlie, our checkbook is dried up, we have no money, and we're not going to help you out. Now, California is already paying many of its workers with vouchers, which means services are going to be cut terrible. Now, here's the other thing that's going to happen. Nonviolent criminals, that means, you know, drug offenses and petty criminals and people who've shoplifted or, you know, got caught peeing on the side of a building and went to jail for something or whatever, are going to be let out of jail. And they're talking, the numbers are staggering. In the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of prisoners who are nonviolent status are going to be flooded out on the streets with no resources. No resources whatsoever to you know, they're not entitled to unemployment when they get out of jail. And I'm wondering what kind of nightmare is going to get unleashed on California. If I were in California, I'd put up a 20-foot fence with barbed wire and get pit bulls behind it and lay in for the siege, because I don't see anything good happening over there. What's your take?
Well, of course, we all know that California as a state is in one of the worst positions out there. And we discussed on a show just a couple of weeks ago, Darrell, the importance of these muni bonds, these municipal bonds. And I did state in that show that there are no explicit guarantees in law or in the documents themselves, in the bonds themselves, by the Fed. The Fed may intervene and may support to help out with these bonds and to meet the payments, etc. But we actually find today the official position is that the Terminator has been told that there is no cash for him and his local administration. So the official stance, and this is the first of the municipalities which has gone cap in hand, begging from the Fed to say, come on, shore up our bond and maintain our credibility. The Fed has said no. I said to you in our private telephone conversation earlier today that my belief behind that is simply that the Fed does not have any cash left.
Yep.
And if they're seen to bail out one state with $5 billion, then all of a sudden we'll have another 49 or whatever all queuing at the door, all wanting $5 billion apiece. They just simply don't have the money. It's that simple.
Yep.
In the Fed. Otherwise, I think they might have even inclined towards Arnie. But under the circumstances, he's been told no. Well, that's it. That's now said, not only are municipal bonds on a negative outlook, but there's no intervention by the U.S.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, we ought to get a bunch of people over here in Europe together, and maybe some Japanese, and maybe, I don't know, a few Russians and stuff, and some like-minded people. We'll raise a couple of quid over here, and we'll go buy the Santa Monica Freeway from California. I'm sure right now, if we had a wallet full of money, they'd sell it to us.
I think fairly soon, Darrell, they'd probably do a straight swap for fruit and vegetables, by the sounds of it, or maybe taser guns, if they're going to release all these cons out who are experts in thieves and minor criminality. That sounds extremely scary, a place where there's no money, no government intervention for money. But the other thing, Darrell, is, you know, the effect this is going to have on the banks. all those muni bonds where there was a glimmer of hope that maybe the Fed would step in and they would preserve some rating status. Now, this is a clear message. The bond is only worth the value of the state. And if that state is worthless, your bond is worthless.
Well, what you got to do, I think, can you explain the relationship from one bond to another? Now, let for a minute, I'm going to give you my little take on it, and you can expand on it, Mohammed. People, they rate and value bonds and the discount on bonds, because how you buy a bond is with its discount price, and then and it's paid in full at the end. So you're getting your discount in the upfront side. Now, here's what I know. Bonds are usually compared to other bonds. In other words, we have creditworthiness, and we see treasuries from certain countries being in the top rated, and you go down the list, and some of them are given tax-free status, some of them are given special drawing rights on them, some of them are only sold to pension funds, and so forth. But they're compared against other bonds in the market. Now, when you get such a huge reversal of quality based upon the insurance or the backing of those bonds being voided or removed from even contemplating, what happens is it has a knock-on effect to every single bond in the marketplace. And we're talking about probably a bond market worth, $15 or $20 trillion. I don't know. What's the bond market valued at if you took every single bond outstanding right now? I have no idea. But just for general figures, it's in the trillions. And so what's the credit knock-on effect of all these other bonds based upon what's happening in the United States munis?
Well, what we have, Darrell, is, you know, we've just seen the breakup of GM, which was, as we mentioned in the previous show, a very high-quality bond. There's been an enormous amount of nervousness in the bond markets in general. Seeing all the munis going on negative outlook, as we reported earlier this year, was a terrible indicator of the global bond market. This was because these are seen to be bonds which are the second best after US Treasuries. And there was this dream that, and people have always said for years, don't worry about munis. If anything goes really bad, the Fed will step in. The Fed has to step in. But now the Fed can't step in, and it hasn't stepped in. So, you know, people are looking at things that they thought there was a kind of guarantee there, even though it wasn't in writing. There was a kind of guarantee with General Motors on the it's too big to fail. Now, if you're holding bonds, you're really in a situation where you're saying, I don't know if this will pay out or not. Forget the ratings, forget the credit quality. You can't look at any measure now that we looked at historically to say, what's the value of this bond? It's literally become one large lottery. You're not holding bonds anymore, Darrell. In terms of payout at the end, a bond has now literally become a lottery ticket. Will it pay out at the end? We don't know. We have no idea, but it's looking less and less likely by the day that bonds will get paid out.
Well, so basically what we're seeing is it's going to have a knock-on effect in gilts and in the euro bond market as well. I mean, Frankfurt today must be reeling, and I'm going to watch spreads move in different directions, and we're going to have problems. Now, this is just another shoe to drop because, you know, one of the things that we talked about, I guess 6 months ago, we knew this was going to come into the marketplace, and it hasn't been getting a lot of light shed on it, and that is the commercial real estate market, which we know has completely collapsed. And the fact that it hasn't made headlines just tells you that there are other worse problems than just the I mean, you can walk down just about any major city in the industrialized world and see empty properties everywhere. And that's not the industrial properties that have gone quiet. And I watched a program last night where a gentleman was touring the industrial heartland of China, and the devastation in their manufacturing sector as a result of this this implosion, this depression, is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, the people are already flipping their lid, and I see a powder keg because, you know, the Chinese have long been on the verge of flipping out to start with, and they've always thrown money at trying to keep their population quelled. Well, I don't see this one going to work here, and boy, I mean, huge, not football field size places. I'm talking about, you know, square mile kinds of factories closed. Astonishing stuff. Astonishing. So, what do you think is the knock on effect of the Chinese implosion coming alongside of the real estate implosion? I mean, this whole thing's going south, Mohammed.
Well, the real estate situation globally on commercial, which is one of the subjects which people are, we're back to this, you know, elephant in the kitchen, the 800-pound gorilla scenario. Commercial property generally across the world is in a dire situation, but nobody's calling. You know, one of the other things which has collapsed at the moment, and I was reading about the stats on this today, was the credit card default rate in the United States increasing month on month.
Yeah.
What people don't talk about is how that gets financed, and again, this is why the bonds are lotteries. All these commercial real estate deals were all backed on bond mortgages. You know, bonds were issued to raise the money, asset-backed. Same with credit card companies. They went to the credit markets using, you know, credit card-backed bonds. The more that people are defaulting on this side, and the credit cards, they can't do anything about it, as those credit card holders default, the ability of the credit card companies to service their bonds is reducing and reducing. But what nobody's done so far is actually call title on real estate properties. At the moment, the governments of the world are telling the bondholders who've got asset, who are holding mortgage-backed securities that give them the right to the freehold, they're telling them, please don't call this in. Don't call this in, because if you do, this entire bond issue will collapse and it will start a panic. But at some point fairly soon, Darrell, someone's going to sit around and say, I'm not waiting any longer. I want that asset because I put in good cash on the basis that if this financial proposition falls apart, I've got an underlying asset that I can at least hold. At the moment, I'm holding a lottery ticket. I want to convert that into title deeds that even if I can't sell, my children or my grandchildren might be able to sell. Somebody's got to start the call process on properties, especially commercial properties. Once they start calling for title in any significant way, it will start, as it always does, a bloodbath. Every man and his dog will be out calling because they know if I don't get my call in first, someone else will get in before me and get the title on anything that's worth having. Because these bonds are issued against a spread of properties, and not all properties are of equal value. So the first man stepping up and says, right, I'm calling in out of this $1 billion issue, I'm calling in $20 million. I've got $20 million of bonds. He's going to cherry pick. He's going to go for, you know, the beachfront property. He's going to go for the thing that's going to be the easiest to resell, the best to keep the value. And if you come at the end of that queue, you're going to get stuff that nobody will be able to give away. So I imagine fairly soon, Darrell, once somebody steps up and tries to make a claim, there will be a stampede followed by a bloodbath.
Well, I've been looking here, you know, over time here against credit quality and economy quality and the rest. And, of course, what we see here, and we're going back to the bond market just for a second, you know, the flight to quality, and people always talk about, I've said that word about 100 times, but flight to quality in today's market is looking like get out of America's treasuries, get into bonds in the German market, and Swiss has a decent bond rating right now, because the spreads that are building on bonds like the Irish bond, they're discounting their bonds so bad, and nobody wants them because they know that Ireland is toast. I mean, their whole system is failing. I don't see any place to hide except into hard assets. And this is another story that I want to get into right now. We see J.P. Morgan recently. I put up the story on the website where they're filling whole supertankers full of fuel and just parking them. full of crude and fuel all over the place, because they know in the final analysis, holding a hard asset in this upcoming round of hyperinflation that's going to hit, that's the only way to guard or safeguard the value of their portfolio. And so people are starting to make mad rushes into wheat and to, I mean, but they're taking and asking for physical delivery. The Chinese are doing this with copper and with molybdenum and with iridium and all kinds of different metals, and they're trying to stockpile because they know once the plug is pulled, the stuff they have in their ledger accounts is going to be worthless. The stuff they've got in their stockyard is going to be worth the value. And I'm watching everybody quietly do this. At the same time, Muhammad, insiders are dumping their stock holdings in companies they own. And it is a bigger rush than what we saw at the beginning of this implosion a year and a half ago, back in September, or a year and three quarters ago. When we called the implosion accurately, people were dumping, insiders were dumping like crazy. It's worse now. So I'm seeing that they're getting ready for some serious plug pulling over here.
Well, of course, Darrell, the conversion of paper, as we were discussing the other day, and the importance of not having things like ETFs and actually having something tangible, can be seen in the very old adage, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. If you've actually got some product which is saleable, that's far better than having something which is, you know, some farming land that may produce, or a mine that's not produced yet but could produce. Actually holding the physical asset is going to be what it all comes down to. We were discussing the possibility of melting down in terms of currencies, that in the absolute worst Mad Max scenario, where currency itself becomes valueless as it did under the Weimar Republic — this isn't fiction, this is something which has really happened in the history of humanity on more than one occasion. In fact, the first paper money ever, Darrell, is a historical example here for everybody. First paper money was issued in China, Mongolia. It lasted for nearly 300 years, but in the end, because of inflationary pressures, it became valueless, and everybody abandoned paper money the first time it was ever run in the history of humanity, and they went back to trading with gold and asset to asset. And if you're there producing your carrots or strawberries or whatever from your garden, and you need a haircut, then, you know, you're going to try and pay the barber with whatever he wants today. And if everybody's already given him strawberries and you've got apples or you've got ice cream or something he doesn't have, then you're liable to get a haircut where other people aren't. I mean, it really does, when it melts down, that's what it goes back to. And these guys are piling hard assets because, ultimately, that's what you'll be swapping for. Non-perishable hard assets that can go the distance of time. Yeah, of course people will swap whatever for that.
Well, you know, one of the things that I read an article recently as well about farmland being in high demand because the world's reserve of food is down to a record low. Starvation is already taking place in some of the weakest economies in the world, and the poorest of the poor are already starving. The reason why this has happened is, and you have to understand the relationship between credit and farming. Most mechanized farms today, regardless of size, if they're 100 hectares all the way up to 1,000 or bigger hectares, each growing season, they, in advance of their planting, they go to the bank and they get a loan based upon what they're going to put in the ground. Now, since the credit crunch, no banks are extending the credits needed to plant their plants. They're just not getting it, and this is happening throughout the farming world. And so, what we're seeing is a lot of farmers are going under because they can't meet their debt service. They're not allowed. They're not getting the capital to fully plant their farms. The reserves in the stockpiles are going down to zero, and farmland is actually cheaper right now than it's ever been. Why? Because there's a lot of desperate farmers out there that the only way they can raise any cash is to start selling off parts of their holdings. So we see this kind of bizarre push-pull situation happening that is going to have serious consequences for people living in cities, because you're going to see hyperinflationary activity based upon the currencies debasing and all the printing going on, all the money printing. But you're also going to see hyperinflation in foodstuffs because the scenario, as I see it right now, no reserves of food, no farmers planting, the world's already struggling to feed itself, and I'm seeing crap coming down the pike here, and I'm expecting by Christmas of next year, we're going to have serious, serious food riots breaking out globally. We're already seeing the beginnings of that. What's your take on all that?
Well, Darrell, of course, the relationship between farming and credit was the cause of the instant financial instrument known as the financial future. Corn futures, wheat futures came about in America a few hundred years ago because farmers were engaged in a seasonal activity. That means that, you know, once there is a harvest, they're able to go and sell and all the money comes in. But these poor chaps and chapesses, their money turns up once or twice a year, say, at crop harvest time. And so they've always approached financial institutions to help with living costs in between. They've always had a good idea of what the price of their crops are going to fetch and what quantity, they certainly know what quantity in approximate terms they should expect to produce in the harvest and what that should be worth. And banks historically have always bailed them out or financed them, given them some kind of support till the crop came and they were able to sell at market. Now that credit is not there, farmers are unable to meet the bills between now and the harvest time, which means that, you know, they've got to walk. If they can't last till that time, then they just say, well, you know, we've got 4 months to harvest and we can't pay the electricity bill today or the gas bill or whatever tax bills have turned up. They're unable to make ends meet. The banks are not there to help with this gap finance because they're unable to extend credit.